Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, it is Thursday, 1 o'clock, and once again, you've tuned into the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You're listening to the Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. I am the executive director of the Heritage Radio Network, and each week on the Farm Report, we tuck into the nitty-gritty of what's happening around the country in the world of agriculture. And today I'm excited to say that we have a very special guest on the line, Mary Berry of the Berry Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to hear the words Farm Report. I haven't heard those since I was a kid.
Yeah, I know. When I was growing up, they would have kind of the Farm Report, and it would be a weekly kind of radio classified of different equipment that was for sale, and you could call in and make a bid on somebody's old tractor or hitch or whatnot.
Well, I was awakened every morning by the Farm Report coming out of Louisville, Kentucky, which is about 40 miles from where I'm sitting. And my father would get up in the morning and turn the Farm Report on really, really loud so that we all knew it was time to get up and see what was happening.
See what's
on the
happening
farm.
Out there in the farm world. Well,
we
were lucky enough to get a chance to meet your dad, Wendell Berry, and meet you when you guys came into the studio this past October. And we wanted to bring you back on the network today to talk a little bit about the Berry Center and hear a little bit more about that organization and the work that you do there. So maybe you can start with just a brief overview of the scope of what's happening and what the Berry Center is.
Well, the Berry Center, the most important work I think we're doing is to continue my father's and my family's work in agriculture, starting in Kentucky. My family has lived in the same place for something like 200 years, and we have farmed for years, and my grandfather really started our family's public life in working on behalf of small farmers. He remembers his father coming home from the sale of his tobacco crop with nothing left over from a year's work. And so he decided at that point to do something about it. I think he was all of seven. And he grew up and went to law school and came back home and wrote what's called the Burley Tobacco Program. And so really ever since that time, my family has been involved in working, as I said before, on behalf of small farmers. A couple of years ago, I was appointed to a federal board that had to do with agriculture and voted on to a very small a family farm advocacy group. I was voted on the board of that group as well. And what I found on both boards was that people didn't know very much about agriculture and certainly didn't know much about the history of agriculture in our state. I went to my father at that point and said, we've got to work on several fronts. We've got to work on education and policy and access to capital, etc. The things that my father laid out in The Unsettling of America, which was published 35 years ago, and I said, we need to work on these things all at the same time. He said, it sounds like you're starting a center, and I said, well, I guess I am. And I said to him at that point, I need to do this, I need to speak for you to some degree, and he said, you and I speak with one voice. So at that point, I went to work on the center, and so we are now in the little town of Newcastle, which is where my grandfather and my uncle John have practiced law. We're actually in their law office. We're about 8 miles from where my parents live and where I grew up, and we're working to change a local food movement into a cultural change. And So that's what we're doing. Would you like to know some specifics?
Yeah, well, let's tuck into a little bit. Taking a look at the goals and services section from your website, where mm-hmm. folks can kind of reach you guys and learn a little bit more by visiting www.berrycenter.org. You know, one of the things at the top of the list is that you're really providing an archival function for some of the writing of the folks in your family. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, are the archives primarily, are there something people can access remotely, or is
the
vision?
They will be able to access them remotely. At this point, a woman who works here at the center with me is archiving all of the papers of my grandfather and my uncle. So it will be a while before they're public, but yes, they will be public, and people will be able to access them remotely. But this has been, it's been fascinating work. For one thing, my uncle and my grandfather write so much like my father. They could all be one person. And we're learning so much about how the Burley Tobacco Program was put together, for one thing, which is not common knowledge in your part of the world, but is the reason Kentucky has 86,000 small farms today. And so we're reading speeches that my grandfather gave to Congress in the 40s, and it's wonderful, and it's the background of my father's work.
I wonder, I mean, I'm often struck rereading your father's work, how it, in a way that I find, quite frankly, a little bit frustrating, feels like it could have been written, you know, last year or last month. I mean, so many of the themes and ideas that he touches on feel so relevant and timely, and I'm curious, are you finding that you're having a similar reaction to reading the works of your uncle and your grandfather?
Yes, and it's... pretty sad, isn't it? I just read a speech that my grandfather gave to Congress in the 40s, and with just a few changes, really just changing some nouns, it could be given today and be completely relevant.
I guess it's that one of that you know, often quoted, you know, those who don't learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, what's exciting about having some of this work come to light and hopefully reach a broader audience is that, you know, maybe we'll do better this time around. Maybe this generation will be the generation that, you know, sees change in a more substantive way. And I know that one of the other focuses of the center is to work on improving young farmer education, and maybe you can talk a little bit about how you're hoping to accomplish that.
Well, first of all, we have to do better. I think we have now backed ourselves into the corner, and we've got to do better. So therefore, I'm going to believe that we will do better. Sometimes choice is a good thing, and sometimes it's not. And at this point, we don't have any choice. I certainly see when I go around the country to speak that many, many, many young people are coming to hear what farmers have to say about what's going on. And I think young people today see that they don't have a limitless future, not that anybody has in reality, but we've been sold a bill of goods for years that the world is our oyster and we can do anything we want. Well, we now know we can't. So yes, we're working hard on young farmer education. We're starting a four-year ag degree at a little college called St. Catherine College in the geographical center of our state of Kentucky. It's an interdisciplinary program that its start was a meeting of the faculty of that little school and my father, and we talked about what needs to be a part of this degree, and so that's in place. We hope it will start next fall. It could take another year, I don't know, but it's in place and going well. We're also starting a farm school in our own county of Henry County, on some land that the mayor of Louisville has donated to the center to start to help people who are already farming or who want to farm and don't want to or can't go to college, to have a place to go and study and do internships and learn what they need to know to succeed in agriculture right now. And it's a rough road to hoe. So we're working hard on as many fronts as we can. We are also talking with several big schools about a way to insert agrarian thought all across all the majors, which I think is essential. Whether you farm or whether you don't, agrarian thinking needs to become part of our culture. And so we're trying to hit as many fronts as we can with the little staff that we have, and so far it's going pretty well, and we're very excited about it.
Now, just to give us a sense of timeline, when was it founded?
It was founded, let's see, it's getting close, well, it's a year and a half.
Okay.
And, of course, we had to do all the things you have to do when you start a nonprofit, and it took some time to get all those things done, but they're done now, and we're underway, and sometimes I think we've gotten a lot done, and sometimes I think we haven't gotten anywhere near enough done.
I feel
but we're working every day. So.
Yeah.
So.
We definitely feel the same way here at the Radio Network.
I understand.
Just kind of staying focused in the midst of what can often feel like a pretty insurmountable work. But one of the things I find so interesting is, you know, you guys have a real focus on Kentucky and using, you know, your home base as the space where you were going to kind of create work and focus on work. And I wonder, was that an obvious choice for you to look at launching an organization that would use kind of its surroundings as the primary model? While you're kind of, you know, putting your tentacles out to reach into these other aspects of things, the Kentucky focus, I mean, how did you come to that as a benchmark?
Well, to repeat myself, I didn't have any choice. I was born here. I'd never have wanted to be anywhere else. I've done some traveling and so on, but I want to be here. This is where I'm at home. And if we're going to follow the example of my family, this is where the work needs to start, or needs to be continued, I should say, because the work has been started. It certainly wasn't started by us. So Kentucky is my context. In fact, I'd have to go even smaller than that. Henry County, where I live, is my context. It's my home. It's where I know that what I do matters. I was asked to write some years back for a conference at the Land Institute in Kansas, a piece called Why I Live Where I Live. And I realized in that piece, and this is the value of writing, of course, you realize things you didn't know you knew, but I remember thinking and then writing, if I think about the globe, about the whole world, I don't matter all that much. If I think about America, I don't, you know, what can I really do? So I got it all, I took it down to the state, to the county, to the town that we lived outside of, and then to the farm where I live. At that point, then you find out that everything you do matters. So you start there. You start on the ground, and you can see what needs to be done. You can join with other people that you know and that you see, and then that work grows. And I think that's the only way to start and stay sane and not fall for big fixes, to work on the little work that must be done. And then you see what happens. Daddy says that when he wrote The Unsettling of America, which was published in 1977, he had four allies besides his family. And he says, now look, there are people talking about these things everywhere. But I don't know that that would have happened if he hadn't come back to Henry County and started to farm where he grew up, in the place that he knew and loved, and he worked on that in that context. I think that's why it has mattered so much. And this, of course, is not to say a person has to live where they were born. They don't. But they have to be at home somewhere. And so, as again, to quote Dad, just get someplace and stay there. And figure out what's going on around you and make yourself useful and at home there. Back to our education program, I gave short shrift to the start of that program. Our friend Wes Jackson, who I expect you know and I expect your listeners know, who works at the land or who runs the Land Institute in Kansas, says that for 30 plus years, our college's major has been upward mobility, and now it has to be homecoming. So at St. Catherine, that's what we're doing. We're going to teach kids how to be useful at home. And that can take a lifetime to figure out, and it's fascinating work. So that is a very long answer to your question of why here.
I think you answered a series of subsequent questions.
Sorry.
So I guess we get to miss out on my lispy meanderings. We are going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about these ideas around planning.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com. Listening to the Knipe Show remix of All Right, OK by Tennille on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, we are back. You have tuned in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I am your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are on the line with Mary Berry of the Berry Center, talking about the unsettling of America, culture and agriculture. So, Mary, before the break, you were talking a little bit about the influence of Wes Jackson in your work and your life, and I want to talk a little bit about the 50-year farm bill, and maybe you can give my listeners who may not be familiar with the concept kind of a brief synopsis of what we're talking about when we talk about a 50-year farm bill.
I'll make this very short so that I don't make any mistakes. Let me say first that to read the 50-year farm bill is one of the wonderful things about it is how readable it is. You can actually do it in not too much time. You can go to the Land Institute's website, and the 50-year farm bill is on that website, and people should have a look themselves and not count on me to explain it. But In essentially, it is a bill that over 50 years changes our agriculture from 80% annual and 20% perennial to 80% perennial and 20% annual. This is absolutely essential work, and one of the reasons that Wes Jackson is so important to all our efforts is that the Land Institute is working on perennial grain crops. And of course, we have to think about grains. Too often, I think the local food movement thinks only about fruits and vegetables, that's the important piece, and of course that is important, but we've got to think about calories, and grain is an essential piece of this. And if just imagine what it would mean if you could turn this around so we're not plowing up such a huge percentage of our cropland every year, that it's in perennial. It would eventually be in perennial grain crops, but we also know that perennial crops include permanent pasture, includes forestry, it includes all kinds of things, or orchards and so on, things that are already going on. So it's not something strange. It's the way nature works. And so that is in a nutshell what it is, and I think the best way to get an idea about it is to read it. Daddy has written a piece that I believe is on the Atlantic magazine's website that gives his point of view about the 50-year farm bill, and that's well worth reading also. But that in a nutshell is what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I would definitely agree with you that it is incredibly readable, super digestible as a piece that everyone should check out for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I know, kind of thinking about the piece and my experience reading it, one of the things that kept going back and forth was feeling like, wow, this is such a radical piece, to feeling like it's so radical what we're doing now, that, you know,
exactly.
What we're doing now is kind of the radical weird thing. You know,
yeah,
what's being laid out in this plan, ultimately it follows my, you know, intuition so fluidly that you know, it was definitely an experience and something I've been thinking about a lot, you know, since we had your dad out in the studio. Well, I wanted to talk about, you had mentioned that, you know, we're coming up on, or we're in the midst of the 35th anniversary of the publication, mm-hmm. Of The Unsettling of America, Culture and Agriculture by your father, Wendell Berry.
Yes.
And you guys are working on a conference to kind of celebrate and kind of look at this question, what will it take to resettle America, that's coming up in April. So I'm hoping you can give us a little bit of a peek into what's going to be covered in the conference and in ways that maybe folks can get involved.
Yes, we're calling it From Unsettling to Resettling, and what it will take to resettle America. We're going to talk about this notion of education for homecoming. Wes Jackson will be there to lay it out for us, and then a panel of excellent people will respond to what he has to say. We're going to talk about food as a cultural product. We're going to talk about true cost accounting, and with Woody Tash and some other from Slow Money and some other wonderful people. We're going to talk about land use, which is what this local food movement needs to be thought of as a land use movement. If we think about land use, then we take this down to the ground where it's got to be. We're going to all talk with Fred Kirschemann and Wes and Bill McKibben and other people about the 50-year farm bill also. And then we're going to kind of have the last morning of the conference, we're going to have a conversation between people like Daddy and Vandana Shiva and Fred Kirschenman, they're going to talk about what it will take to resettle America. And we expect to leave the conference with some concrete ideas of how to do this work, or how to continue the work, or how to strengthen the work, depending on where we are. We also hope and, well, we plan to have, after the conference, to work on a book that will be kind of, I've been trying to think of a better title or a better term for this, but a sequel to The Unsettling of America, called Resettling of America. So I hope that the conference will start us where we are right now and help us move forward. And I even am so bold as to hope that it will be a watershed moment when we say, at this point, we all agreed that these things need to be done and we need to go to work in partnership with everyone who's working on these things and get this done. I don't know how long it'll take. I don't know how all of it looks. I don't know how we're going to do all that we need to do, but I don't think we have any choice, and I don't think there's any better work than to try to make this change. So,
and I do feel like you've just laid out for folks who are just, you know, oftentimes I find folks are just starting to engage in starting to think a little bit more deeply about where their food is coming from and about agriculture and trying to get a sense, I think, in particular for urban residents who either didn't grow up with agriculture, in engaging in agriculture in a way that they were, you know, I was at this party last night, and there was a tote bag at the restaurant in Haven's Kitchen, and it said, you know, a quote from your dad, eating is an agricultural act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as urban residents, we often don't think of it as such. And, you know,
I think that you're so wise to be saying this. In my travels, and I've been traveling and speaking a lot in the last year and a half or so, and intend to keep it up for a while, I have needed to and wanted to, but mostly needed to, tell audiences of interested, concerned, good people ready to go to work on this, that this is, we're talking about farmers and we're talking about rural America. And if we don't keep our minds on rural America and what it takes for a farmer to survive, one of the things that my grandfather talks about a lot in his speeches and in his writings is the idea of parity, which of course is completely lost in our culture. We had that idea through the New Deal and so on, but we've totally lost it. But we've got to stop fantasizing about what's going on in the countryside and start really looking at what's going on. We've got 16% of this country's population lives in rural America. Everybody else is urban. Now, that's a deserted countryside. And, you know, all of the wonderful things that are going on with urban agriculture and community gardens, et cetera, are absolutely wonderful and need to work and are working in lots of places. But we cannot do without the countryside. And I think a lot of the time, people who live in urban places forget that or haven't noticed it. And it's easy to forget it right now because we've got plenty of food. But our food system has Achilles heels all up and down it. And we need a flourishing rural America to actually make us food secure, as people say. I don't especially like that, but we've got to have it. So, and of course, country people have never been much appreciated. And my father says the way culture goes is the way agriculture goes, and we've lost our agriculture, and we've virtually lost our culture. So, you know, we've got a lot to do, but now we're asking the right questions, and we're beginning to insist on answers, and maybe we're even becoming a country of people who can see what's going on and who can actually think for themselves. I see evidence of that everywhere, and it's very encouraging. And so I'm hoping for the best.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, what was interesting about some of the conference lineup and your father's work in particular is, you know, I think you outlined some great people for folks out there looking to self-educate and start thinking a little bit more deeply about these issues. Should definitely seek out some of those authors and thinkers.
Oh, absolutely.
And obviously, you know, if you haven't already kind of read extensively of Wendell's work, definitely important. I would hearken to say necessary. It's important, I think, to look for ways to give yourself a perspective as an urban resident and understand, I think, you know, how you make an impact in your home here and how that is reflective of what things look like in the countryside. And if folks want to sign up for the conference, are tickets available yet, or where should they look for them? Or
On January 25th, they will become available. Check our website on that date, and our finished agenda will be there, the cost, etc. All of the information will be on our website on January 25th, and that's when we start taking reservations, not before.
And
so,
I know.
And also on our website, you were talking about things that people should read. There's also a list of what we call the Wendelberry book list, and there's a quotation under it from my brother who says, "Dad would want everyone to know who his teachers were." And it's a list of really excellent books that were written in, most of which were written in the 20s, 30s, 40s by great people who were virtually forgotten. But, you know, Dad didn't come up with this all on his own, and neither did any of the other great people that we've talked about today. There have been people talking about these things for a long time. They just haven't been heard. So there's a world of good information, and it's pleasurable. I think it's more pleasant to live an examined life, as they say, than to just kind of sleepwalk through your life. I mean, you ought to think about what you eat and what you buy and where you buy it. It's more pleasant that way.
Yeah, I think you find out
who your neighbors are.
Exactly.
This sometimes seems like such daunting work, and it's kind of seems kind of grim to some extent. But on the other hand, it's where our joy lies.
So take heart. Mary, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today. Best of luck in your work, and we definitely plan on staying in touch. If folks haven't already, definitely get to the website, www.berrycenter.org. Sign up for their email list, take a peek at the conference, the book list, and of course, you know, always, I'm sure, financial contributions are welcome. To continue to support your work.
Well, that was very nice of you to say. Well, I enjoyed being with you very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary. If you miss us live, don't worry. This, like all 27 of our programs, are available as a free download through our website, through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. We are a nonprofit organization, and we depend on the support of our listeners. If you like what you hear, you want to support our work, you can make a donation by visiting us at www.heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the donate tab. Thank you so much, and tune in next week for another episode of the Farm Report.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.